Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of That Creative Life. I am your host, Sarah Dici, and I am recording this in the closet of my parents' bedroom in Texas because we're just all trying to do what we can. I think that's the theme of the past month or so, is we're doing what we can. And I appreciate you guys. I appreciate everyone who is out there helping the world off to a great start, helping the world turn, and also everyone who is staying at home. Today we have a really amazing guest. Her name is Michelle Carre, and it's so funny when I introduce people like this to you guys, because, you know, you're probably more likely to stumble across her videos on YouTube than you are to stumble across my Dell XPS review videos. So it's always an honor to talk to people who produced such high quality content. It's just, I don't even want to call it content. It's like films. She's producing wonderful TV shows. I'm just such a big fan of her. But before we get into today's episode, just a thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you, B&H, for sponsoring this podcast. B&H is a group of people who are passionate about the things you're passionate about, from photography to film to music, art, technology, creating, and imagining. I am such a big fan of B&H because I live in New York City. I get all of my gear there, photo, video, laptops, iPads. B&H is the largest non-chain electronics retailer in the US. So I'm just here to let you know, if you are in New York City, you can actually still pick up gear at the B&H Superstore within 30 minutes in NYC. So a 30-minute pickup time. Of course, the Superstore is closed, along with a lot of other retail, but you can still pick up gear. And then there's also free next day shipping in the state of New York. And then they're also still shipping worldwide. So you can always go and check out on their website, bnhphoto.com, to get some updates on their shipping times. You know, sometimes just the show has to go on if you're staying at home doing your part. But hey, you want to get into live streaming? I just recently bought, what's it called? The Elgato HD60S Plus. I think that's what it's called. Because y'all, I am getting into Animal Crossing in a big way. I've been waiting for a video game to really capture my heart. I started trying to play Destiny because I was a big Halo gamer back in the day. And who would have thunk it wasn't Destiny? It was Animal Crossing that got me back into video games. I've probably poured a solid 30 hours into it now. I started a week late, so all of my friends' islands are just mind-blowing, and I'm trying to catch up. But if you want to check out the latest and greatest gear, just go to bnhphoto.com, and they also have some really great resources, videos. They have the B&H Explorer blog, which helps you inform your purchases. So thank you, B&H, for sponsoring this video. You can go to bnhphoto.com or check out the links in the show notes below for all of my gear, this podcasting gear. If you want to know the microphone I'm speaking into right now, or the recorder I'm using to record this audio, or the cameras that I usually use, again, those podcast links are always in the show notes below. And without further ado, I'm excited for this one. Michelle, you are amazing. I'm excited for this conversation. Enjoy, everyone. Welcome to That Creative Life. Hi, my name is Sarah Dici, and I am your host. I talk with artists, YouTubers, CEOs, and everyone in between. I hope this podcast helps you live your best creative life. Enjoy. Michelle, welcome to That Creative Life. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. I'm such a big fan. Before we get into things, I'm just going to do a little bio for you. If that's okay. So we have Michelle Carre, who is a YouTuber, host, and actress. You have an amazing series called Challenge Accepted on your channel, and I just watched the FBI one, and oh my gosh, it is so good. So you train and become these professions. So you've done firefighter, police, FBI agent, Olympic figure skater, a Marine, NASA astronaut. And as a person who makes videos, I'm watching these and just being like, how long does this take her to do this, and how? So we're going to get into that. You're a former national champion in cycling. Wow. host of HBO show Karma, which is coming out in May on HBO Max, and just an all-around amazing content creator. So welcome. Did I miss anything? Can you fill in some holes?
Oh my gosh, what a kind introduction. Thank you.
Of course. I mean, I'm just so impressed by you. And I've been binging a lot of your YouTube videos. So I think a good place to start is with your series, Challenge Accepted. And right out the gate, I'm curious, like, how many people does it take to produce this? How long does it take from your idea to hitting upload? Oh, because it's a lot.
Yeah. So I, well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on your podcast. Super, super excited to be here. Hello, listeners. For anyone who doesn't know, like Sarah mentioned, I have a series on my channel called Challenge Accepted. And basically in that series, I choose a community, lifestyle, or profession to completely immerse myself in for anywhere from 1 to 12 months. So that can range, like Sarah mentioned, from going to Marine boot camp, to training with NASA astronauts, to entering a beauty pageant and showing all the behind the scenes of that. So I'm just a curious person and I love pushing myself to the absolute limit. So that's where it comes from. In terms of how long the episodes take to make, they really can take anywhere from 3 to 12 months in terms of concept execution.
Oh my gosh, 3 to 12 yes. months. So what are the ones that have lasted 12 months?
So the most recent Challenge Accepted episode that came out Sunday the 29th is one where I went to FBI Academy. And that video we began in June of 2019. So it's been 9 months. And a lot of that was, you know, we reach out to the FBI. Actually, it was May of 2019 when we reached out to them. And their approval process, just to approve someone to come and do what we wanted to do, took 12 weeks because they've never, ever let any reality show or YouTuber or anybody come and film what FBI Academy is actually like. So it was a really big deal. Then we got to film in September. And then we edited and had a big, long approval process for getting it all okayed by the US government. And it went live. So yeah, that's one. Another one that took a long time was I did a video where I tried to become a runway model. And I didn't think it would be that hard.
You're like, I mean, I've been a cop, a firefighter, no big deal, right?
I certainly didn't think it would be our longest production of an episode ever. But it took 12 months to make an entire year because I just kept getting rejected from every fashion show I applied to because of how short I am.
Wow.
There were times where, for example, I got very far in one specific application process to be a model for a designer. And then they're like, oh, we love your look. We love like what you're doing. And we love the idea of your video. And the second I mentioned my height, they're like, oh, you can't walk for us. Sorry. Like, we're super about inclusivity, but we just can't have short people walk. And I was like, how can you say that you're all for inclusivity, but then you don't want people of different heights to walk? I didn't think that it would be such an obstacle, but it definitely was. But we
out of curiosity, how tall are you?
I'm 5'2". So I'm like a foot shorter than most runway models are. But we finally found a designer who was willing to let me walk, and I ended up becoming the shortest person ever to walk London Fashion Week last year. So that was really cool and a little bit of fun revenge for everyone.
Yes. No, I love that. And out of sheer determination or strength, like, what was the biggest one that put the biggest toll on your body? Because when I was watching that FBI one, it was right after the firefighter. And when you were jumping in that cold pool of water and like having to put on a wet sweatshirt, but then in the FBI camp you had to do all these different challenges and obstacles, and then emotionally it seems like it's really tolling. What was the biggest challenge for your body and your mind?
Oh my gosh. That's a really good question.
All of the above.
Really, it's funny because I think that all of the communities we explore have their own set of unique challenges, for lack of a better word. And it's like an apples to oranges comparison. I, in some ways, would say Marines the hardest training.
Forgot about that one.
But it's because they're yelling at you the whole time and you're dealing with that mental stress. Being in a beauty pageant is a ton of physical and mental stress because you're training 6 days a week to look good in a swimsuit for 10 seconds on a runway in front of a panel of judges. And then you're also having to answer difficult political questions under pressure. But I think the most unique physical challenges were probably police academy and fire academy, because in police academy, I experienced getting tased and pepper sprayed, which is not necessarily like a feat of strength. But it is something that I would never wish upon anybody else. And something I didn't realize that police experience during their training. I always thought they just have these tools to use against people, against bad guys, I guess. But I didn't realize that in training, you actually get hooked up to a taser. And the instructor says, if you're going to administer this to somebody else, you need to know what pain you're causing someone else.
Wow. Wow.
So that was terrifying. And then, of course, fire academy is difficult as well because you're literally going in a burning building. And before I went in the burning building, they're like, if you take your mask off, this isn't a simulation. You're going to die. Like, don't do it, you know? And you're in there and it's hot. And there, what I love about the videos is I learned so much that we take for granted. For example, firefighters, I don't think people think enough about how when they just suit up, just the gear alone plus the air tank is 60 to 80 pounds that they're carrying. While they're carrying victims, while they're lifting pieces of wood of a collapsed house or building. So it's amazing. It's really amazing what these people do. And I feel really excited and fortunate that we can give these everyday heroes a platform to be seen and heard in a new way.
100%. Were there any hesitations from the firefighters or from the Marines to be like, okay, you can do all of this, but not this? Because it seems like you do everything, but is there hesitation from them, or have you been like, how about we just don't tase me? But is like, because I feel like I would maybe pick and choose, but I guess that's why these are so authentic. You really go through it. But has any, because you seem pretty like, I'm gonna go for this, but has anyone, you know, being a firefighter or anyone from the FBI, have they ever been, you shouldn't do this?
Well, when we started the series, of course, when you reach out to people, they're very hesitant about my ability. And I also experienced a little bit of sexism, honestly, in the beginning, reaching out to a lot of organizations that were like, are you sure you're strong enough to deal with our academy and our training? And even with my background as a professional athlete, they would question my ability. Fortunately, now that we've worked with the Marines, NASA,
you're
FBI,
like, watch these videos.
We have a repertoire that we can say, like, well, watch this first and tell me what you think I can't do.
Hello.
I think part of it is that I enjoy proving people wrong. And then another part of it is I know that if I don't go to the full extent, people will call me out. So if I go to police academy and half-ass it and skip pepper spray and skip being tased or whatever, all of the people from that community whose opinions I value the most when we make these episodes, they will be like, well, she didn't do this, so it's not a real experience. And that's kind of why I want to differentiate myself from other reality shows that, you know, do, oh, we tried ice skating for a day. That's great. That's awesome. And I want everyone to have their opportunity to try anything. But also, like, I'm really about fully representing the communities and their hardships as well.
Mm-hmm. Have there been any cool community responses from maybe close friends or family members who have these professions, or maybe people writing you emails? What has been your experience through the actual, you know, people who are in these professions? How have they responded?
Oh, it's so cool to get feedback. We actually got an email last week that made me cry. But this girl sent us this email saying, and we get stuff like this all the time, which is insane to me. Because, and maybe you can relate to this too, but as a YouTuber, sometimes you see a view count or a number and it's a metric of success. And it's not really like I'm thinking, oh, this many millions of people are sitting down, taking the time to consume our content. What a blessing that is. And so we got this email from this girl who said that, you know, she was very lost in life. She had dropped out of college and she saw our Marines video and had just completed basic training. Wow. Because of the video we did.
Wow.
She felt inspired to do it. And she was like a woman of color from a low-income household. So seeing that is really important to me because I'm also really, I really want to champion diverse voices and diverse people feeling empowered to do the things they want to do, even if they don't feel represented in the media. So that was really cool. And she included like photos of her going through boot camp in, wow, in the email too.
And I was like, yeah, oh my, I guess, gosh, these are really good recruiting pieces for these organizations.
They are.
Like, just send a video out and be like, look, if she, I mean, you're super fit though. But I can imagine that being a woman, sometimes it probably is intimidating to be like, oh, am I strong enough? So that's amazing that you're going and showing that, hey guys, anything truly is possible. Firefighter, police, yeah, marine, I mean, it's amazing.
Well, I think that a lot of people see the videos as, oh, Michelle is accomplishing something in each one or whatever. But the way we choose the video ideas is actually choosing a profession and choosing an associated fear. So there's kind of like this formula that we use. It's not a formula, but like our best videos always kind of fall into this category of, I want to blank, but I'm not blank. So for example, I want to ice skate, but I'm too old to start. Or I want to be a NASA astronaut, but I'm not smart enough. I want to be a runway model, but I'm not tall enough. So each of them for me, I always want to make sure that there's like a personal connection to a piece of fear. And I always know that if I'm scared to do a video, it's probably going to be an important one to make.
I love that. Ooh, that is good. Because one of your goals in life is to be a badass, you know, actor in a Marvel show or something, I have a few questions. I have a few questions for you because I feel like you are the person. I stopped sports in high school. I was always a sporty person. I played basketball. And I always had these crazy dreams of, I feel like, doing things that you're doing in your videos. Because I would watch Alias was my favorite show. Did you watch that show?
I didn't, but I know Alias, yes.
It's so good. So Sydney Bristow is, you know, Jennifer Garner in the show, and she was a badass CIA person. And I watched all these shows, and it made me want to be, I got to go kick butt in the CIA. So I'm curious, yeah, you're doing all these things. Did you, like, what was your inspiration? What did you watch? What did you see as a kid? What has put those dreams into you to, you know, be this badass and kick butt and you want to act and have an action role? Where did that start?
Oh my gosh. Well, I feel that it started just being a mixed race kid in the South who never saw themselves on Disney Channel. It starts there. It starts from growing up in a predominantly segregated white and black community, where I was the only mixed race person that I knew in my high school, really. And so from there, I sort of was also this person who kind of did everything. Like I did theater and science fair and debate, like a bunch of different stuff. So I kind of think that that's why I like trying lots of different things in general. And then after my professional cycling contract ended, I was also working at BuzzFeed at the time. And I thought, oh, I could combine both of these things, get to try lots of new stuff and see how I can keep up this physical fitness part of it. It really came from this desire within myself to want to have that professional athlete lifestyle still. because I love being active and being outside. It's a big part of my mental health and happiness. And then also at that time, I wanted to just expand my resume, you know, like on an acting resume, there's like a special skill set. And I was like, you know, I should add a couple more things on there.
I'll just link my YouTube channel. Look at all these things.
Yeah. So I want to be able to, even when I go in an audition room, say and have the experience of, if I ever, and I'm available, by the way, CSI, to go on CSI, I know how to hold a gun properly. Yeah. I know when you step on a crime scene, what to actually look for, kind of stuff. So it's that practical part.
And then you look at all these TV shows, like the Chicago Fire and the police shows, and all the shows that people watch, you have been in that actual profession. You've been in their shoes, and you're also an actor. So boom.
I'm saying,
we're putting it out there, guys.
I would love to. Yeah, I would love to.
Email Michelle.
Who knows what's happening with the entire television industry now because of COVID. But
yeah, well, and I mean, that's one of those things that I noticed in some of your comment sections of your videos, is a lot of people would be, wow, this needs to be a TV show, talking about Challenge Accepted. But then there's equally as many comments being like, guys, she's doing it on her own. She doesn't need a network. Look, she's out here crushing it, right? But how do you balance in between the worlds? Because that's obviously something that you want to do, right? You be in that TV movie industry.
Yeah, well, I think that we have a really unique situation on my channel where the best performing videos are the ones that take the most out of me.
Okay, but that's good, so, though. Because sometimes I'll spend a month on a video, it'll get no views at all. I'll make a vlog that took me an hour to edit, and it'll get a ton of views. And you're like, oh, sure.
Why? I have the same situation. But I think people at this point, they're expecting me to
step
do
it
crazy
up. Yeah,
stuff
yeah.
every time. So we sort of like put ourselves in this pigeonhole situation.
Yeah.
But it's been great because I want to make content that's just really as good as it possibly can be, even if it's not the same as other YouTube content. Mm-hmm. And as far as straddling the two worlds, I'm doing my best right now. I got a taste of it last year hosting Karma for HBO.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about that show.
Yeah. So Karma is this new reality show on HBO Max, and it's a kids competition adventure show where a bunch of teenagers live in tents in the wilderness for an entire month, competing in physical and mental challenges for $50,000.
Wow, hello. So, okay.
Hello, like Sweet 16 situation. Mm-hmm. So that was a really amazing experience because we had a huge crew.
Yeah.
I had to really step up my hosting game because it wasn't me delivering my story. It was me helping to champion a bunch of other people's stories, which I'm all for. I loved it. It was such a wonderful experience. And I really hope we get a season 2 because that would be awesome.
Oh, that's so cool.
But it's wild because I don't really ever interface with kids or anything ever. And living with a bunch of teenagers all summer,
you
learn a lot.
How do you get constructive sentences out of them? Because I imagine, you know, so you got to make a good TV show, right? So you have to ask these kids, oh, what were you thinking in that moment? But I imagine
they're very good.
Okay,
they're very good. The casting was incredible. They all come from very unique and different backgrounds and ethnicities. Location. I was very, very impressed with casting on this, and the kids were super smart.
Awesome.
They knew what was going on for sure. And they love talking and sharing. So there's a lot of great reality content.
Yeah, that'll be fun to watch. So your team, how big is it? Do you have full-time editors, full-time producers? Do you use freelancers? What is kind of a day-to-day in terms of personnel?
So in terms of full-time employees, we have 2 full-time editors, 1 part-time editor, a part-time producer and assistant, And then Garrett is the creative director.
Amazing.
And then whenever we do like bigger episodes, we bring in a director of photography, art department, like bring in all of that for bigger episodes.
When I watched these episodes, my first question was, YouTube Premium, they have to be paying for this, but it's all you. So how?
It's all me.
All you. So is this, and there's no sponsors. So is this literally funded by AdSense?
So in terms of funding, it is partially AdSense, like in terms of like our revenue stream.
Yeah.
It's partially AdSense, of course, but we actually do have quite a few sponsors. They're not necessarily within Challenge Accepted episodes, but if someone sponsors, say, an episode of our fitness show, Extreme Body Makeover, then we'll siphon some of that money into Challenge Accepted.
Gotcha. Okay, that's cool.
Because we're big on sponsors. Yeah. We're available.
Hit her up, guys. Because, a lot of my friends have channel sponsors. Like a lot of the tech people basically will have a D brand sponsor, which is skins for your phones, and so they won't sponsor specific videos, but they'll just sponsor the channel. So every phone you get or every laptop you get, they throw the D brand sticker on it, which I find is an interesting way to do it, and super cool when brands are that flexible, because I know with me, every brand is different. Sometimes they're super strict, sometimes they're super chill. So what has mm-hmm. been your experience working with brands? Because you've been full-time post BuzzFeed for 2 years now? 3 years?
Almost three.
3 years?
I think.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, working with brands is always a unique experience. There are always some that are cooler than or more flexible than others.
Yeah.
But for example, our Marines episode was actually sponsored by the U.S. Marine Corps.
Like amazing.
They invited us out. Again, a situation where they've never allowed YouTubers, obviously, to experience boot camp. So they invited us out to go do that and set it all up and everything. And that was a wonderful partnership because it's a video we would have just wanted to do on our own anyways. Mm-hmm. And they were offering to sponsor and compensate for it.
That's
so that
great.
Was amazing. So we do everything from like shout outs to full on sponsorships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That in a great adverse dedicated video, always such a interesting line to go in between. I know for me, it's I've been trying to get a little bit more chill sponsorships because when something's dedicated, I feel like I have to pause my entire life and make the best video ever. But in terms of revenue streams and keeping the lights on, have you had any big struggles, challenges, with expanding your team? Was hiring hard? Did you already have, I imagine you had friends from BuzzFeed and stuff, and you guys had a good group of creative people. What was, your biggest challenge growing your team?
I mean, the biggest challenge was probably within the first couple months, because when I left my job, I was doing everything with my savings. So that's a stressful situation because it's a big risk. Now, luckily, I had a very unique situation where my channel grew rapidly in the first 3 months when I left. So that was great. But when you make your first full-time hire, that is a huge, huge responsibility, because in my situation, we have an incredible editing team. So editing is like just as much a part of the story as me being on camera or as us getting these experiences with the FBI.
I feel like it's one of the hardest things to hire for too, because I'm sure you have a specific voice and you want certain things, highlighted. Oh, that always needs to be cut, but it takes a while to really communicate that to someone.
Yes, editing I feel is so underappreciated in the world. And it's such an incredible art form where like an editor can really craft a story or kill a story. And the editor that we work with currently, he is incredible, and he was my first full-time hire. And he at the time was working for a professional post house in Los Angeles, like working on TV stuff. And to offer him a position such that he quit his job and came over here, that's scary because you can't fuck it up. Sorry if I'm not allowed to say that. You totally. Can't mess it up yeah. because now he and his family are depending on me.
Right. No pressure.
To make sure we have money coming mm-hmm. in all the time. And it's obviously like a huge investment when you think of, well, can I edit that video? And then I just save the money. Mm-hmm. But investing in the people has been such a wonderful experience for me to become more comfortable yeah. with and offering competitive rates.
Right.
Offering
especially in LA
benefits. Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, once you start getting into it and payroll taxes and all these things, and you're just like, oh my gosh, this is more than I thought.
Yeah. And when you think of like agents and managers already taking a percentage right. of everything, and now you have payroll, but I feel like and some people have even said like, oh, your channel, the infrastructure we have at our channel with this many full-time employees usually doesn't happen to like, I don't know, like 3 to 5 million subscribers, yeah. let's say. So we did it a bit early, but like, I know that in order for the channel to grow, we have to be making baller content. Mm-hmm. In order to do that, we have this like chicken and egg situation. We need to hire properly. We need to build yeah. a strong foundation here so that we can grow. Yeah. So I hope it works out.
It seems like it's working out.
Well, yeah. It's working right now.
A lot of times.
We'll see how long the quarantine lasts.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's very true. Gosh, I didn't even think about that. So, I mean, how is that? Are you guys thinking about different types of videos right now? Are you turning on a dime? Oh, we were going to do that, but now we got to do this. What's it like currently for you?
It's wild because our episodes take, I want to say like 4 to 6 weeks to edit per with two editors on it.
Wow.
Like FBI took, I think, 5 weeks into
how many different rounds of revision are they sending this to you in Frame.io? Are you in the editing suite with them, kind of giving notes?
We have an editing suite okay. at our office.
Yeah.
And so we're all working in the same room and working on things together, reviewing cuts. We do a lot of, I love working on edits in person, and Garrett, the creative director, is so good at directing edits and giving mm-hmm. feedback. We're on Frame.io now, of course, because we're all working remotely like we should be.
Yeah.
But in terms of rounds, at this point, it's not that many rounds just because the editors, Silas and Madeline, are so good. Like, they know what the voice of the show is. So that's amazing. Yeah, I love it. I love working in person with people, and I'm
yeah.
really missing that.
Yeah,
and
I know.
As far as like how we're pivoting during quarantine, I think we're all in a situation where we're quickly learning how to be creative. So for us, we're lucky that because the episodes take so long, we have a few that will last us probably until mid-May. In terms of post-production, but
and then you might have
I'm
to
ready
film
to film
some quick episodes.
Yeah, so, yeah, we're ready to film. We're looking at stuff.
Yeah,
because we had a couple really big videos we were supposed to shoot in March that of course were
dang.
Canceled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. It's crazy because I feel like on one hand doing YouTube, we are unique where we can still shoot stuff. Kind of. And then the movie and TV industry, when you're having crews of, you know, 20, 30 plus people, you really can't do anything with that. So I imagine it's a challenge with your channel where you do have multiple people on the shoot and it is very high level production. I didn't even honestly think about that. I'm like, oh, YouTube, you'll be fine. But it's you're having to think outside the box here.
Of course, I think we all are.
Yeah.
But I'm enjoying that, you know. I'm thinking, oh, what are some cool videos that we can do safely from our home, or mm-hmm. Reporting on important people that are helping this crisis.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to embrace it.
Yeah.
With creativity.
I love it. Well, I can imagine you guys will manage. You'll figure it out. And it's funny, when I was Googling you, that sounds so weird to say.
Ooh.
But we almost had the same birthday. So my birthday is August 11th. Yours is August 10th. And then I saw your Twitter and we got engaged within like the same week too, recently.
My Lynn mentioned that you're engaged, but I didn't know when you got engaged.
Yeah, it was like the second week of February. Isn't that funny?
What?
So we officially need to be BFFs.
And you're from Texas.
Yeah, I'm from the South.
I'm from Louisiana.
Exactly. So, you know, I live in New York City now, so I'm like a Southern transplant.
This is so wild. So wait, what city? Are you from Dallas?
Dallas, yeah.
I'm from Shreveport.
Gosh, yeah, I have an aunt in Shreveport. She used to live there, and now she lives in South Carolina. But I actually went there a couple of times as a kid because that's where my aunt lived. This podcast is brought to you by B&H Photo. Wow, I'm telling you guys, my parents' closet sounds pretty good. You know, I've been spending money trying to soundproof, not soundproof, but sound modify my office in New York, make it sound just, you know, make audio sound better. But I'm now convinced I just need to record everything in a closet with nice, soft clothes around me. Anyways, I'm getting off topic. You know, in all the podcasts, I like to focus in on, you know, kind of one piece of new gear. We talked about the iPad 2020 last week, but today I'm talking about the Blackmagic Livestream Switcher. So it's called the, I don't know if they spell this out or whatever, or you pronounce it, the Atem Mini Pro, A-T-E-M. And it was so funny when I went to bnhphoto.com, they had a B&H Explora blog post sitting right there on the main page. And I was like, oh, wow, y'all are doing my job for me. This is exactly what I need to know. So it's a switcher for live streaming. And they also released a lot of updates for the Blackmagic Pocket Cinema Camera 6K and 4K. You guys know I'm a big fan of those cameras, so that was a good news for me. But this live stream switcher, it basically has all of these inputs. You can plug multiple cameras, do multicam stuff, and they have great software to basically just switch in between different cameras, different things that you have set up while you're live streaming. If you want to start that show from your bedroom right now, maybe it's the time to start live streaming. I'll just read you guys from the blog post a little blurb about this, and then we'll get back to the podcast. But I always love these live stream things because, again, I told you that I just purchased the Elgato HD 60S Plus, but that's just to capture the game, capture Animal Crossing on the Nintendo Switch so I can make a video of it. But then I also have Elgato's Stream Deck, which you can plug a camera into your computer to then put through OBS to live stream. And I'll put all these B&H links in the description below if you're curious. And the Elgato is a way to live stream with just one different camera, and then you can do all the magic in OBS. But this Blackmagic Mini Pro switcher is a way where you can plug in multiple cameras, switch in between, preview what you're about to you know, put on the screen, do some live animations. I'm just going to read the description from the blog post just so you can get a gist. And if you're curious, I'll just leave the link and you can check it out more. So the Mini Pro, building on the all-in-one switcher and control panel design of the original Atem Mini, the Atem Mini Pro adds multiple new features, including studio-style control for the popular Pocket Cinema Camera 6K 4K camera, simultaneous streaming and recording via a USB connection. So that means you can stream to the world while you are recording that video, and a multi-viewer window output. It incorporates a hardware encoder for streaming, negating the need for separate streaming software, which is so huge because OBS does not play well on any of my Mac computers, but it obviously is a really good streaming software for Windows. It just never works, I don't know, for Mac for some reason. A timecode generator for syncing multi-camera productions and quick button streaming on air and record options. So this thing, there's just so much, but I'm rambling now, and I know we want to get back to Michelle's conversation, but there's just, the more I'm sitting on the internet looking up gear, the more I'm convinced, like, oh yeah, I need all of this. But I say this to just inform. I hope you guys are creating with what you have, and then maybe you can take that next step, you know, when you want to. But I know for me here, I brought like the basics of my setup, and I'm thriving out here in Texas. You know, we're doing good. We're hanging in there. But if you want to check out that new Blackmagic Livestream switcher, I'll put it in the show notes below. Okay, back to the podcast. A lot of stuff that you talk about in terms of being, you know, the only mixed kid, obviously I am as white as a white person could be. But my fiance is half Korean and he grew up in South Carolina. And so just hearing his stories where he would feel out of place with the white kids in South Carolina. But then when he spent time with his Korean family a few times in his entire life in Korea, it was the first time that he felt like he had a real family, but then he couldn't speak the language. And
oh my gosh, I can relate so hard to that.
Yeah, and so when I was hearing some of your stories, I was like, I feel like this would be interesting to talk about, because I know him now as an adult, for the first time he's experiencing Korean culture and really excited about it, and he's trying to learn the language, and wow. You know, he really feels like it's a second home for him. So yeah, there's just so many parallels. I feel like
that is wild.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So how was growing up in Louisiana?
Oh my gosh. Louisiana.
Where do we begin?
Literally.
How did your parents find Louisiana, first of all?
Well, my mom is from Louisiana, okay. And then my dad immigrated to Louisiana.
Gotcha.
From India when he was like 10.
Wow. Very cool. And what were their jobs? How did you grow up?
Yeah, so my parents met at the end of high school, I guess, and went to college together and then had me. So my mom became a full-time mom and my dad was working crazy hours. So I definitely relate to your fiance in terms of not feeling fully connected to either culture and in this weird middle ground, because I had the same experience where the first time I went to India, I got to meet all these relatives that I had never met before, which is so cool. And it was so bizarre being in a room of a bunch of people who look like alternate universe versions of me.
Yeah.
Like you see the physical similarities, but then you can't speak the language or like fully get on the same page. It was so bizarre. But I guess it's cool at the same time to be ethnically ambiguous. I don't know.
I mean, how did your parents treat it? Because I know, sorry, John, I'm telling your whole story, but I know he's told me a lot of the time that he's thankful that his mom is Korean. He was thankful that his mom basically was like, be as American as possible, listen to this music because this is what people listen to, forget about Korean, you need to learn English, you need to do XYZ. And he's like, because he acted as white as possible, you know, he attributes that to him surviving high school, but now he feels like a piece of him is missing because he didn't get to experience you know, a lot of what his culture was. I mean, how was it growing up in middle school and high school and, you know, probably being one of the few ethnically ambiguous people?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely relate to that when you're just growing up, you just want to fit in and not be made fun of. And it was interesting because I remember as a kid never feeling that it was different or weird until other people pointed it out. So I have this really distinct memory of when I was like, I think like 3 years old, probably walking through the mall, and a woman addressed my mom, who is white, as my babysitter. And when my mom kept saying, I'm her mom, she didn't understand how or why I could be her child, or if I was adopted or something, which is so bizarre to me because I'm like, white plus dark brown equals lighter brown. Are we like, did you do painting in elementary school? Is this that really that far off?
Well, it shows you how crazy it's come though. Cause nowadays it's like, oh yeah, you know.
Yeah, sure. I'm so thankful for that. I'm really grateful that my kids, whenever that happens, will be in a bit more normalized situation, because that was really hard for me to hear people just be confused all the time at something that was so simple to me.
Right. Because in order to be accepted, you first need to be just accepted from the outside. So I can imagine, that's would be almost like a roadblock that not a lot of people have to think about.
Yeah, or this like awkward conversation starter where people are like, right. Wait, what's your ethnicity? And then asking all these questions you're
where
Indian.
Are you
what tribe?
Really from? Yeah. No,
exactly.
No, really. Not Louisiana.
Yeah.
Well, hard pivot. Let's talk about BuzzFeed a little bit. I know you probably hate to talk about kind of the beginnings because I'm sure a lot of people are over it because you stand alone, your content's so good, your YouTube channel so amazing.
Well, thank you.
but yeah, BuzzFeed definitely seemed like a training ground. And I'm so fascinated about the inner workings there. And obviously it has, I'm sure, changed a lot. The internet has changed. But what was that experience like for you? And how many years were you there? Did you have experience being in front of a camera before? I mean, did you start out as an editor, a filmer, a producer? What was that journey like?
So BuzzFeed was my first full job after graduating college. And I worked there for 2.5 years.
Okay.
I started as an intern.
Wow.
Yeah.
Things escalated quickly for you then.
Yes, I started, changing batteries in a camera, holding a boom pole.
Yeah.
Moving whatever needed to move.
Wow.
Going on strange prop errands around the city.
That's so funny.
And then I advanced to a fellow and then a junior producer and then a more advanced level of producer. So technically our positions there were producers. So like anybody you see on camera at that time, most likely they were a producer. And producer was sort of this like vague term for doing everything because we filmed, we edited, we conceptualized all the videos. We were responsible at that time for 6 videos a month end to end.
Wow.
Ton of content, 6 videos. I mean, now I upload once every 2 weeks,
yeah,
twice a month probably.
Man, and you're working with other people. You have to schedule things out, get on the same page. That is a lot.
6 videos. It honestly blows my mind.
Yeah.
I can't imagine doing it because at this point, I don't really edit or do anything.
Right.
And to think about doing 6 videos end to end.
Wow. Yeah.
It's exhausting.
Well, what was the hardest thing to let go of? Did you, like, in terms of, because for me, I've always been an editor. So that's the thing that takes up the most time. But, it's the hardest thing to let go of. Was there anything, you're still hosting. So is that one of your favorite things? Or did you have a hard time letting go of the camera or editing or producing when you started delegating?
Yeah, I think a lot of YouTubers have trouble letting go of parts of the production process when they advance their team mm-hmm. or grow it. For me, I was like, take it.
You were ready.
Somebody else edit this. But for me, I was also very protective over how the edit would turn out. So I knew it had to be a phenomenal editor
yeah.
who really understood the voice and what we were trying to do and how to repurpose shots and mm-hmm. and build a scene. And I'm so lucky that we found the team that we have because they are really, really good. And now I feel like fully, they do everything. So it's awesome and they're great. I think for me, the anxiety doesn't come from letting go of something. It's more of finding the perfect person to fill that position.
Right. So how did you go from intern to knowing everything that you know now? In only 2.5 years, you must have learned a lot. Like, how? Did they just throw you in it and, okay, you're going to edit this video now? Or were there little BuzzFeed
thrown in?
Because
I didn't
camps?
Go to film school or anything. I didn't really know anything about it. I learned so much there for sure. And as an intern, especially, you're kind of just asked to jump into every skill set, which of course is very difficult, but also something that I really value. I respond really well to high stress environments. As an athlete, I enjoy like a regimen and a plan. So 6 videos a month, let's do it. Of course that leads to burnout for a lot of people. So I'm very grateful now to kind of have that churn mindset and the mindset of getting things done quickly and efficiently. But also I'm very thankful for Garrett, who is a creative director and comes from a traditional film background and traditional documentary background. So he really balances out, no, let's elevate the production quality. Let's take an extra week on this edit. Let's take more time finding the right people to train you for this. He's really always quality first. And I'm very, let's keep the train moving first, you know? So we kind of balance each other out there. And I'm so thankful for that.
Yeah. And I love the originality of your, because honestly, the why I left BuzzFeed became a genre of YouTube videos. So I appreciate you taking that extra step and basically making it a fight scene. That was hilarious and amazing.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I feel like, again, everyone, if I half-ass something, it just doesn't work. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I wish I could daily vlog and
well, that's a question I wanted to ask you. You know, I think YouTubers all the time have that quality versus quantity thing always going in the back of their heads. And have you ever experimented with that lower quality content? It doesn't have to necessarily be lower quality, but it's not as big of a production, right? Have you ever done that? Do you ever have hopes to produce anything that is a little less heavy? And
of course, especially in the beginning of my channel when I didn't have many resources, I was doing the low-hanging fruit. It was more the quick internet-y style video of trying things. So instead of going to the FBI Academy, I was, you know, trying different weird spas around Los Angeles, still experiencing different ways of living, I guess, in a much smaller, more manageable scale. For now, I'm really excited because we're going to be launching a podcast, which is really fun. Podcast.
Amazing. And plug it. What's the name going to be?
It's called Mission Accomplished, which is like a play on Challenge Accepted.
Yeah.
And it's going to be all about accomplishing things or failing and then accomplishing things. So we'll be doing a lot of cool interviews with people from our videos and talking about our own experiences and just having fun. I'm excited for that because it'll be more laid back. The videos that we do now are just so almost surgical in the edit and execution so that it does feel like a TV show, that I want to bring a lot more of that personality back. In terms of like doing daily vlogs or the other kind of low-hanging fruit, what we found with experimenting with a little bit of that was that our hearts just weren't fully in it. And then at the end of the day, you're still paying an editor to edit that video. You're still taking valuable time out of your day to film and conceptualize all that. So, and it wasn't really working. We weren't growing. And I feel that the videos that are best to invest in are the ones where we're growing as creators and growing our audience.
100%. Talk about your career as a pro cyclist. What does that even mean?
Oh my gosh.
That's amazing. I mean, I hear you put that in interviews and kind of talk about it, but I found a hard time finding anything on it. How, first of all? what is
it
like?
Well, it was very short-lived because I only did it. So I was on my collegiate team for 2 years.
Okay.
And in the second year, we got third at nationals, and then I won U23 nationals, which is just in, I don't know how that happened, but whatever.
Well, and explain to me, is it distance? Is it speed? All like what is that?
So there are different events.
Okay.
And the event that I specialized in, because everyone kind of has their specialty, let's say, is called Criterium. And so Criterium is, they basically section off a piece of a downtown area. So imagine like a grid of like a square or an L shape around a couple different buildings. And you do repeated laps of that at a very fast pace. Usually there's like a big crowd watching as well. And you do it for like an hour. So there's that. That's one event. There's also a road race event, which is like your 60 to 80 mile 4-hour Tour de France type event that's about endurance. And then the third event is called the time trial, which is anywhere from like 10 to 30 minutes where you're by yourself just seeing who can do this distance the fastest kind of thing.
Interesting. So what was yours? Yeah.
So the one I specialized in was Criterion.
Okay.
And by specialize, I mean like I was okay at it, I guess.
You apparently won a championship. So.
No, but the crazy thing, so people are always like, oh my God, you won nationals. But the wild thing about that, and I feel like this has also been sort of a metaphor for me in general, is I didn't win it because I was the most talented or the fittest person there, because I definitely wasn't. But what happened during the race is that sometimes during races, I don't know how to explain this. How do I explain this? So basically, when someone attacks, I'm putting attacks in quotes, in a bike race, it means they start to sprint ahead of the group. So like, let's say the group is together and one person sprints ahead. People can either decide to chase that person and bring them back to the group so they don't run away. Also, this is in quotes. Or they can let them go. And you hope that that person who's gone off on their own just kind of burns out, because it's much harder to ride by yourself versus in a group where you're like tucked in, protected from the wind.
Oh.
That's a so
no,
complicated.
I'm interested. This is interesting.
Yeah, so like if you're riding in a group of 30 people, you can go much faster than you can with less effort, because you're protected from the wind, because wind is a really big part of cycling. It's sort of like if you were on a boat and you have a sail, more wind in the wrong direction can really mess you up. Or if there's a strong headwind, it makes you have to push much harder to get through the wind. So the hope is when someone goes off by themselves, oh, they're just going to burn out in the wind. They won't do anything. They're not a threat. So the day before that, we had the road race, which is the long event. And I like didn't do that great in it. But then the next day we had the Criterium, and during this race, one girl attacked, and she was another person who didn't perform like super great during the road race. So I think the group mentality was, she's not a threat. She's not going to just ride away from us and win the race. Is this making sense at all?
Yes. No, I'm, okay, cool. I am in it.
So nobody chases after her. Right. And I'm like, this is just dumb. I'll go with her. So I go after her, and no one follows me because they're not worried about either of us, because the two of us hadn't done well in the race before. So why worry? Like, they're just going to burn out. We have like 45 minutes left of this race. We'll catch them eventually. What ended up happening was I caught up to her and I said, put your head down and we're going to do this. No one's going to expect it, and we'll just see how long we last. And we literally like hauled ass for 45 minutes. And by the time that the rest of the collective group realized, oh no, they're like too far ahead, we have to catch them, no one could get it together to chase after us. So then we won the race.
It was just you guys.
Yeah, but I feel like that's sort of a metaphor for like,
wow,
people underestimating.
I love how you said we won the race too. But did you ahead at the last moment?
At the end, yes, okay. I did. She burned out a little bit at the end. Understandably.
So
it was
you're collectively
miserable.
A team player, but also you know when to push forward.
Sure. Cycling
is
so a very Hunger Games
type
sport.
Nice you were being. Like, you got this, girl. Let's go.
Yeah, I was like, listen, no, like, what else are we gonna do? Just like ride around this thing for 45 minutes and then get like last place.
I love
in the sprint.
That though.
I was just like, fuck it, let's do
it. Yeah, you're too humble. You're way too humble. You use strategy. You were smart. You were determined.
Yeah,
that's
but
amazing.
People do that stuff and then it never works, or like you get chased down or whatever. So I was very lucky that it did work.
Oh,
like I
so
literally
cool.
I think the photo of me crossing the finish line is like, what? Like, I'm like, what the fuck?
Confused.
In the photo. It's like, how did I do this?
Wow. So that was that your second year of college?
That was my senior year of college.
Okay.
Yeah. And I remember I called my coach and I was like, I won. And he was like, great. What?
Excuse me?
Tell me what happened. So,
wow.
Yeah, but I feel like, you know, you never know who's going to pull ahead or who will kind of come out of nowhere. Yeah. You can't like judge people.
And so
I try to tell myself that whenever people are underestimating.
Oh yeah, don't underestimate Michelle, guys. And then how did you continue that after college? Did you at all?
Oh, okay. Yeah, so then after I won that, I was able to secure a professional contract with the BMW, like the car, women's cycling team, which is really cool.
Didn't even know that existed. That is amazing.
It does. I don't think it does anymore. Wow. Cycling is such a weird sport.
Yeah.
Things come and go so quickly. And it was a one-year contract, so I basically advanced to the professional status and got my ass handed to me for an entire year before I decided to do this. I mean, I think people think like, oh man, you were a pro cyclist. That's so crazy. And like, technically, yes, but I was objectively way worse than everyone else because the jump from college to or junior level to professional is insane. It's literally insane because those are the people who are going to the Olympics.
Wow. Yeah.
And you're like, why am I here? But it was just such a brutal sport. Every time I was explaining this to someone yesterday, I think, where the moment I knew that I felt like I shouldn't be doing it anymore was when it got to a point during races, crashes happen all the time. It's like a given. You know, someone's going to crash in a race. And when it got to the point where a crash would happen and my brain would say, move left around this crash. Okay, keep going. Like, that was the mindset I had. And it wasn't, oh no, a human is on the ground bleeding.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Right.
But that's the way you have to, it's kind of military-ish in that way of you, when something goes wrong, you have to accept it and move on very quickly, or you will crash or mess up or something. And once that started happening for me, I was like, you know what, guys? I don't know why I'm here, you know? And I felt like I could make a much bigger impact by creating videos and making viral content. That was a much more impactful way to bring awareness to women in sport or women doing amazing things. Because I sort of had this dream of like being a professional athlete was like always a dream. Professional athlete and on camera situation. And I realized, oh my gosh, if I just give up this idea of what, like this title of I'm a professional athlete and exchange it for I'm a professional jack of all trades.
Yeah.
How much more powerful could that be for bringing awareness to amazing women?
100%. And sometimes that is, I can imagine, even though if you did feel a little fish out of water, I can imagine that did take a lot to step away because I'm sure it was such a big part of you. I remember, this is definitely not as dramatic, but when I played basketball in middle school, I was the player. I was like the best point guard ever. But then you go to high school and I went to this like special hand-picked point guard camp where all of these like college athletes were the coaches and stuff. And you get in that bigger pond of fish and you realize, oh, I'm not as good as I thought. I'm good because I was a part of, you know, my town and the neighboring schools. And it's hard to let go of something that you love so much when you realize you look around, you're like, oh, wait, I'm no longer the best. This is kind of weird. That camp brought me to tears. That was when I quit basketball and pursued music.
Wow.
Good times. But yeah, it's cool that you figured out a profession to really live out still physically challenging things and then encourage people along the way. That's really special.
We're trying.
I love it. Okay, well, wrapping things up. Any words of wisdom for the people out there who have a challenge in their life that they just need a punch in the face? Maybe they just need the encouragement to make that video, to try out for that team, to pursue that major in college. Any words, Michelle?
Wow, what a... No pressure here at all. I guess that I would say that one thing that has always stuck with me is the quote, everything you want is on the other side of fear, which I think is so powerful. It really eliminates any room for excuses. And I think also if you're pursuing something that you're not sure about, having an accountability system is really important. So for me, it's going to be online, so I better put in all my effort. And finding that version of that for you, whether it's a workout buddy or setting deadlines for yourself or talking to your therapist or mental health professional about deadlines for yourself, I think that's really, really important.
That's amazing. Michelle, thank you so much for being on this. You are so inspirational.
Gosh, thank you
for having me. Oh, of course. I mean, it's been such a pleasure to binge all your content the past few days.
Well, thank you for watching.
Oh, of course. Where can people find you? Are you your name everywhere?
Yes, I am Michelle Kahre, K-H-A-R-E, on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter.
Amazing.
TikTok?
TikTok? Hey. And then I guess we'll look out for that podcast. You have a date in mind?
And our podcast, Mission Accomplished, coming soon.
Okay, coming soon. We will definitely be looking forward to that. I can't wait for the HBO show, Karma. That'll be very exciting.
That's going to be good.
Yeah, we'll make sure to check that out. And thank you so much for being on. And everyone listening, make sure you hang tight for the Q&A at the end. But Michelle, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you.
Bye, guys. Fantastic episode with Michelle. Michelle, thank you so much for being on That Creative Life. Make sure you guys follow her. Such a good follow. I just watched that FBI episode and my mind was blown. Holy smokes, is she talented. If you guys want to hang around, I do a 3-question That Creative Life Q&A where you can just ask Sarah Peachy questions and I answer them at the end of all these episodes. And usually I just field these questions in from Twitter. It helps if you use hashtag That Creative Life, but if you just mention at Sarah Deechy, I will find them as well. But just a final shout out to B&H for sponsoring this podcast. If you guys want to check out gear, if you are local to New York City and you need to pick something up, B&H Photo is still there for you. Just go to bnhphoto.com to check it out. I know for me personally, I love them. They're great in the New York City community. They empower creators. They help with gear loans to make sure we know what we want before we buy it. And they also wrote this really, really nice profile on me, on your girl, Sarah Peach. The wonderful writer just spent a lot of time on it and it almost felt wrong. I'm like, you shouldn't pay attention to me this much. This is just crazy. But I really appreciate it. And if you guys want to read it, if you want to learn more about the behind the scenes of like me, it feels weird to promote, but it's a really good piece. We go all the way back. I even talk about my days of playing boys baseball in Texas. So I'll link that profile down in the show notes below to their B&H blog. And you know, an accessory I always leave off from my podcast gear that I didn't realize until John actually bought basically my same setup. So you guys know the good traveling setup is the Zoom H6 with the Shure 58. Is it A? I had to look at the mic that I'm using, the 58A mics. It's a pretty cost-effective setup. And of course, just an XLR cable. But I forgot to mention that the fuzzy pop filter on top of the mic is actually what helps all of it just sound really great. Because without it, your P's are just, ooh, that was a good sound effect, Sarah. Your P's are just super poppy. So I didn't realize that until I heard his first round of audio. And I was like, oh yeah, you need something fuzzy on top of your mic. And then best practice is, you know, you don't want to kiss it. You just want to keep maybe 4 to 6 inches away. So I'm going to go through these Q&A questions super quick here. Here we go. Oh no, I forgot to favorite them and put them in the album, but we'll survive. Okay. Sarah Deechy, I'm sure you've gotten this question before. Oh, this question is scandalous. Are you still going to use peachy in your branding, even though the peach is now an emoji euphemism, words, for butt? Listen, y'all, the peach emoji, I feel like, has been another symbol for a bottom for a while. So I'm not going to let that bring me down. I'm Sarah Deechy, rhymes with peachy. That'll just be my branding. You know, I am engaged. So, you know, a lot of people are asking me that question of like, are you gonna drop Saradici, drop your name? And right now, Saradici is who I am online. So I'm not gonna worry about that right now. So Saradici rhymes with peachy. I'm here to stay. Okay. At Dinkleman. Wow. He says on Twitter, was watching Saradici's podcast, and at some point she said, so I'm 3.5 years into college and I can't make anything practical. So that was me referencing that, you know, I was about to graduate in a year from a computer science degree and I couldn't build a program. I really couldn't do anything that you would think a computer science degree person could do. And then it continues. And then I started thinking if I wasn't spending hundreds of hours learning stuff on my own, I'd be like my classmates who can't make a sandwich. I mean, that's a very interesting tweet there, but it hit a good point in that like a college degree isn't going to get you that job. It isn't going to, you know, that piece of paper alone isn't going to get you a lot. So if you have that, you know, if you're pursuing that degree, but then you're doing projects on the side, you're actually excited about what you're studying, of course you're going to be successful. And I think one of the most meaningful things still about college is the community that you build, the people who you're around. So if you're not taking advantage of that, you know, that was my case. I was very introverted in the back editing videos. I was not taking advantage of the education. So when I was doing the bare minimum work, of course I wasn't learning anything. I wish it was, you know, I wish the system was better in that you could just focus on the schoolwork and you could know everything and be fine, but that's really not how it works. So I guess it depends what kind of learner are you. Do you need people around you? Do you need a teacher to really stay on top of you and your assignments? Or can you learn on your own and you can look up coding boot camps and YouTube videos and really just engage in something that you're passionate about and search online for those things? Because that's how I really learned video editing. And I had a lot of friends who were video editors and I would just ask them questions and you know, I didn't go to school for what I'm doing today. So whether you're in college or not, I think you have to have a certain level of self-motivation. You just have to make that decision for yourself. It really wasn't a question, but I thought that was a good point to where, you know, you really have to take these, take initiative in what you're studying and what you're learning. And yeah, that just wasn't me in college. But when I found something I was super passionate about, video editing, I was like, game over. I'm going to watch these YouTube tutorials all day long, right? Okay. So I feel like I ranted too long. I try to make these snappy. I'll try to get more snappy for you guys. But I'm going to end the Q&A there. Thank you so much for listening. And I hope you guys are doing what you can. Staying home. And yeah, until next Monday's episode, every single Monday, thank you for listening.